This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
Before we get to the drama,
which we will, we say good morning to Chris Canty. Good morning, Chris Canty.
Good morning, Dave. I'm doing well. Another day, another disagreement between the baseball owners and players. What else is new? But, you know, I'm hanging in there. It sounds like we're getting closer to the return of live team sports. So I'm optimistic, but, I mean, it was a long road to get to this point.
Yeah, it's been a very long road to get to this point. We will get into where we are with Major League Baseball in just a moment. We turn to the other side and say good morning to Rick DiPietro. Good morning, Rick.
Good morning, David. Good morning, Christopher. I shaved today. I mean, if you wanted some
really
some good news, I shaved today.
Some optics. Shaved this morning. If you're listening on the radio or on the app, you now know that Rick is clean shaven all the way through. Full facial shave, huh?
Full facial shave, and I'd like to be referred to as Chloe O'Brien for the rest of the show. From 24 fame, since I am a computer genius, and I again connected myself, no problem.
Nice. You're such a big boy, aren't you?
This is what I'm doing during the pandemic. I'm using my time wisely. I'm now officially can hack into Comrexes and everything else. Impressive stuff.
Now, Rick, the button on a machine.
Rick, the big question is, did you take a before picture before you shaved?
No, I wasn't. It was nothing special. I mean, it was just a gross beard. Yeah, it was just gross. Yeah, neck hair connected to the back of my head. It was bad.
Okay, I'm working on that Ryan Fitzpatrick beard right about now.
I wish I could grow something like that, but mine is for some reason it's like the coarseness of my beard when it gets that long looks. I mean, it's like rope. It's awful.
Yeah,
it's not a good look for me.
I'm using an afro pick to comb my beard now.
Chris, have you gotten a haircut yet? By the way,
what'd you say?
Have you gotten a haircut yet?
No. I haven't gotten a haircut in over 3 months.
Oh, my God.
I haven't got a haircut either. I mean, I have no haircut. I've just been shaving. That's it.
Oh, my goodness.
I got like a mullet almost.
Is it growing up?
It's growing up, out, and then the back is growing down. Like, so most people, I didn't even realize this.
Lean into it, though, Rick. If you've kind of got a mullet right now, you should lean into it, shave the sides, and just go full on mullet.
Own it? Own the mullet?
Yeah, own it, yeah.
I could do something like that. I don't know, though. I don't want to get that with what Mike Gundy did and everything else. I don't know if I approve of a mullet at this point.
You could do the new Mike Gundy look.
I don't want to be anything like Mike Gundy. Yeah, I'm going away from Mike Gundy.
But Bubba Wallace has a mullet. It's kind of got a mullet thing going on.
I could show support for Bubba Wallace and go mullet.
There you go.
Yeah.
Exactly. You stand with Bubba.
That would be nice.
He's a good-looking guy, Bubba Wallace, by the way.
He's got a lot going on for him.
Yeah. I felt good for him yesterday,
you know,
too.
I'm always uncomfortable when you turn the conversation this way.
Yeah, but he is a good-looking guy. I mean, you got to admit it.
I don't understand how you can't find another.
I don't feel right commenting.
I don't understand how that's possible.
I'm not judging any beauty contest, Dave. I'm not doing that. It just makes me feel uncomfortable.
Bubba Wallace, in saying that he's a handsome guy, he would be. I mean, he is a very marketable face of NASCAR.
Yes, I will agree with that. He would be a very good face for the sport. One of the new faces of the sport as it tries to rebrand itself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, but that's, again, goes back to the stupidity and the idiocy and every other word that you want to involve in what's going on with the noose and everything else. When you listen to him talk, I don't care what color his skin is, you realize, you know what? Sounds a lot like me. He likes to race cars? Well, I enjoy watching people race cars. He likes to ride motorcycles? Well, I like to ride motorcycles. If you just open your ears and listen once in a while, instead of having these preconceived conceptions of people, you realize, regardless of the color of your skin, you know what? He's a lot like I am.
But Rick, what you're talking about involves work. And how often do we talk about people being intellectually lazy and not
doing
a lot of work?
Too
exactly.
much.
So, I mean, that's ultimately what it comes back to, man. We all know that racism and that kind of hate is due to ignorance. I mean, it's not a well thought out ideology. It's not. It's ridiculous is what it is. And people that deal in that, people that perpetuate that, people that promote that type of stuff, they're the people that we're fighting against when we say that we do stand with Bubba Wallace. They're the people that we're fighting against when we say we want equality. They're the people that we're fighting against when we say we're fighting racism. And we have to get to the point as a society where we're willing to vilify those people, where we have a more visceral reaction to people coming out and doing things like what they did to Bubba Wallace on Sunday afternoon.
Like, I think yesterday
I'm glad that the FBI is getting involved with this.
Mm-hmm.
That they told the FBI office in Birmingham, you know, devote all of your resources to that to find out exactly who did this. We're going to go after this person. We're going to prosecute this person. I'm glad that that's happening because we need to have that type of reaction. I know that we have people saying, I'm tired of reacting to it. No, we need to continue to react to it, and our reactions need to be stronger just so we condemn that type of behavior and we condemn that type of thinking. That's the shift that we need to see in American culture.
I did like the way that NASCAR reacted, though, as far as the drivers and the crews.
Yeah, it was very unifying. They did a great
job. That was
a
huge win. I mean, that was a huge win for NASCAR. I mean, not only for, you know, what happened before the race, the people that actually tuned in, you know, to see it. I mean, that's, again, there are, you start talking about people watching baseball and everything else, you know, having the opportunity to control the landscape of sports. I mean, I'm sure there are a lot of people that tuned into NASCAR just to see what was going to happen next, you know, how they would handle it.
And they did
what happened
on
Sunday.
They did really well yesterday.
Unbelievable to start. I mean, you saw how emotional. I mean, between having, you know, Petty there and him giving a hug, but you saw Bubba, he was breaking down, crying, trying to get out of his car. And then on top of it, the finish that they had in that race was crazy. Talking about a guy who won a, how about a, here's a little tasty NASCAR nugget, which you don't usually get on our show.
NASCAR nugget, yeah.
So did you get a chance to see the highlights of the finish of that race?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which is crazy, right? So he wins, he ends up winning by 0.007 of a second. That was the identical time he won by last year at the same track.
Really?
So that's back-to-back wins at Talladega by 0.007 seconds.
0.007 of a second.
In back-to-back races at Talladega. Wow. That's crazy, right?
That is pretty unbelievable.
It's a tasty little nugget for you.
Yeah, it's a nugget.
Nice little nugget there.
Spicy little nugget.
And how spicy it is.
And what made it nice, too, is that so Blaney is actually Bubba Wallace's best friend.
Well, that's nice.
Which was even cooler, yeah.
Yeah, that is. And what, Wallace finished, what, 14th?
14th, yeah. He ran out of gas. I mean, he's in a position to win the race. He ran out of gas.
The fact that he was as competitive as he was after going through the 24 hours that he experienced, that to me was the win in and of itself. I know it sounds crazy saying that because, I mean, if you don't win, you lose. But yesterday seemed like a day that not only Bubba Wallace won, but the sport of NASCAR won.
I would agree with that wholeheartedly.
Yeah, just
I
mean, seeing how everybody supported him before the race, seeing the fans that he interacted with after the race, Dave, that group of fans that came from Atlanta, mm-hmm. and that was their first race, a lot of black and brown faces. Like, that's – I'm telling you, man, that's what NASCAR is trying to move toward, but that's also what our society is trying to move toward – get into a space where we're more inclusive, when we're more welcoming from people from different backgrounds, different ethnicities. And I just think that, you know, we're going to be all the better for it.
Yeah, and maybe so, this opens up an entirely new fan base for NASCAR.
It could be. And it was an ugly incident that led to this show of unity. But, I mean, I just feel like the sport is going to come out even stronger. And as a society, we're going to come out all the better for it. You hate to have to go through it that way, but I think we're at a time in this country where we're forced to face some of the problems that we've had, some of the problems that we've been in denial about. And I always tell you guys this, the first part of fixing a problem is acknowledging that you have mm-hmm. a problem. And I think we've all gotten to that point, or the majority of us have gotten to that point. And it is the ignorant few that are still trying to hang on to the status quo. But like Rick said yesterday, those folks are going to be left behind.
Yeah. They're going to be run past, absolutely. Now, today on ESPN Daily, guys, NASCAR driver Bubba Wallace finished 14th in Talladega less than 24 hours after a noose was found in his garage, prompting a reckoning in NASCAR. The story of Bubba Wallace and the state of NASCAR on ESPN Daily. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcast. So, listen, obviously Sunday was a horrible day, not just for NASCAR. It's just a horrible day to have something like that happen. It's just repulsive and repugnant. But they handled themselves very well. And yesterday I thought was a really good day for the sport of NASCAR, both in unity and you know, the legitimacy of the race and all that kind of stuff. Richard Petty flying in there, all of that I thought was very, very big for the sport of NASCAR. So let's move and switch over to where we are with the sport of baseball. Chris, sounds like we're going to have baseball, not the way any of us were hoping that it was going to be agreed upon, but it sounds like probably late July, early July for training camp, late July to start the games, that we will, in fact, have the return to baseball. We'll find that out officially at 5 o'clock today with a vote from the players.
Yeah, we'll find out with the vote from the players on the health and safety protocols. But the owners, unanimously agreed to proceed with the season under the terms of the March 26th agreement. And Dave, I mean, I'm a little bit surprised that we're here just because we had Buster Olney tell us last week that there was not really going to be the potential to have a season if the players didn't agree to waive the right to file a grievance. But the players retain that right, and they're going to try to move forward. I think they're going to report July 1st, and the season is going to start July 24th. But, yeah, I'm a little bit surprised that we're actually going to have a season. I guess the fact that the players didn't want to accept the owner's most recent proposal is an indicator that Tony Clark and the legal team for the MLBPA feel like they have a good case for the grievance and potentially winning that. But, I mean, in terms of looking at what the players are getting right now, it's not something that I would feel good about if I was one of the players. I guess the only part about it that you feel good about is that you get to return to play the sport that you love. But the conditions that they're going to play under is not something that I would feel good about.
Not only conditions, but, I mean, you read some of the stuff, too. I mean, 19% of the league is going to be playing for $25,000 or less this season. I mean, what did you win? I mean, so what are you going to now? You hold on to the fact that, you know, you have extended playoffs and,
wait,
you know, players
how much money?
For $25,000 or less, 19%.
$25,000 or less?
Yeah, because of the money that they were paid with $170 million when there was no games. So now for the rest of the 60, because of, you know, they're not going to forgive that 170, they'll be playing for $25,000 or less.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. So what did you gain? So what, you'll have leverage in the next CBA negotiations that you can, you know, you can have extended playoffs and players being mic'd up as a bargaining chip?
So they think.
Well, so they think. Tony Clark is going to be in real trouble with his union if they don't win this grievance.
Yes.
Because what did they get? I mean, in all honesty, what did they get?
Well, they hold out with the expanded playoffs. They hold out with the universal DH.
Yeah, which is, okay, so you're cutting off your nose to spite your face.
I agree with you. You're saying, what did they get? They look at it right now.
No, but
now,
how do you say,
like, that's what we got here. We didn't give in to their demands as far, right? No mic'd players. That's what we got here.
Yeah, but it actually may be to your disadvantage that you decided not to go with 16 teams. What if you're a team that's a really good team, but gets off to a really bad start or has a couple players get COVID-19? And now all of a sudden, I mean, because there's only 10 teams instead of the 16 teams, you don't make the playoffs. What good does that do you?
It does you no good.
But not having any playoffs, I mean, not getting a playoff share.
If you get a bad 30-game start, you almost can't make the playoffs. If you go 10-20, you're almost eliminated from playoff contention unless you go crazy in the second half.
And in all honesty, I don't think the players are going to win this grievance. When you actually read the March 26th agreement, it says the feasibility of playing games with no fans. The number of games with no fans. You tell me, what does that mean? If I can't see, how do I know if it's feasible or not? How's the arbitrator going to say one way or another if it's feasible or not?
Well, I think the arbitrator would be privy to more information than the players would otherwise have, right? Because, I mean, I'm sure if you're going to go to an arbitrator in a courtroom, you're going to have to disclose your accounting, your records, your books, per se. And that could be valuable for Tony Clark and the MLPA going into the CBA negotiations. So I'm not a lawyer, so I don't know whether they have a good chance of winning or losing a grievance. But I do know that based on how Tony Clark has positioned the union in his constituency, that he is betting that he's got a pretty good chance at being able to win that grievance. Otherwise, why would he fight to try to retain the right to file one in the first place?
Because I think that he's going back to the fact that he thought the initial, because for him, the win was fully prorated salaries. And then figure out what the game's going to be.
I guess I look at it from this standpoint. I mean, early on in the process, a couple of months ago, the owners were talking about, you know, implementing a 48-game schedule or a schedule that was in the 50s because they felt like that was the sweet spot for them in terms of locking in player costs and protecting the downside of having a season where they would get no gate-related revenue. And that number ended up being around $1.4 billion. And so you mean to tell me after all of the back and forth after the last 2 months, you only end up getting another $100 million in player salaries across the league, and you actually don't get the forgiveness on the money that was advanced to you earlier this spring. So after 2 months of negotiating, you go from $1.4 billion in player costs to $1.5 billion in player costs. That to me doesn't sound like a win for the players. Sounds like a tremendous waste of time.
Which is exactly what the owners want. Waste as much time as possible till they got to the number of games that they wanted. Which ends up being 60 instead of the, 48 or 50 because it looks better.
Yeah.
So if there is a grievance, this is what we got. I mean, we feel comfortable playing, 60 games at fully prorated salaries. And that's what it was going to be this entire time. They had a number and that they were going to stick that number. And rather than go 50 because that looks bad because there's still enough time to play more than 50. Yeah, okay, we'll 60. Give you 60 games in 66 days.
Which right now, what are we, June 23rd? If you're going to report on July 1, start playing July 24, be done by the end of September, that's a lot of baseball in that amount of time. That's reasonable.
Yeah, that's reasonable. But again, for the people that were like, this is a 162-game sport, who the hell wants to see 60 games? The only good part about it was I was going to 60 games would be a sprint. I was going to have 16 teams in the playoffs, so everyone would be engaged.
Right.
And then I would have players mic'd up. There were things that would make you feel better about only playing 60 games.
Yeah, they had the opportunity to make this a huge win for baseball, and in typical baseball fashion, they didn't.
Well, there's nothing new now except the universal DH, which is great for us as Mets fans, but there's nothing like you miss it. Like, I can't wait to watch it, and then you'll turn it on. You're like, oh, it's still baseball. Nothing's changed. There's no players mic'd up.
Rick, this seems like a natural opportunity to have some innovations. Like, if you wanted to tinker with the sport, you could. And because everybody would understand this is a little bit of a different season because of what we're dealing with the pandemic. But the fact that you didn't do any of that, the fact that you have a sprint type of season with no expanded playoffs, with losing the opportunity to engage more markets in the postseason, it just seems like it was a tremendous waste. So we've been talking about how baseball had an opportunity to be the only game in town. And for a couple of weeks, it still will be, but you had an opportunity to have that over the last couple of months, and you didn't take advantage of it.
It feels like Tony Clark has been outmatched this entire time.
Because I think he has.
From the second they released the 50-50 revenue split, and they made it about the union, made it about money, till where we're at now. On top of it, too, pretending like the owners
The union didn't make it about money, though. That was the owners that made it about money. The union just bought into it.
They took the bait.
Yeah, they took the bait, but they weren't the ones to make it about money. That was the owners.
No, the owners. The owners put out the bait, and Tony yes. Clark took it.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, you got to realize, you lost in 2016. You know exactly what they're doing. Don't buy into it. Make it about health and safety. That's it. Bottom line, always health and safety. But no, they took the bait, and it became about money. And on top of it, too, like the whole – I was thinking about this morning. The players are going to pay for this one way or another. If it's not this – they'll get fully prorated now, but what's going to happen in free agency? It's going to be a bloodbath.
They won't get their money.
They're going to have to do something about that in the next collective bargaining agreement. They got to change that.
And here's the other thing that's diabolical by the owners, too. Pretending like offering the players no draft pick compensation with qualifying offers. Right? Mm-hmm. It's because what owner is going to want to give a player a qualifying offer?
Mm-mm.
Now, I'm going to give you a what? It was $17.8 million. Are you going to want to pay anyone that now? But you'd look stupid if you didn't because you'd lose a draft pick. Now you're not going to lose that. Now you wouldn't lose a draft pick, so you don't have to offer the qualifying offer and fear that the guy's going to actually take it.
Right. Wait.
I think the players union got. I think the players union got played this entire time.
Does that surprise you though?
No.
Isn't that what you, if I would ask you this on March 26th, who's going to wind up long term winning and who's going to wind up losing? Right. We're 3 months later now. You would have thought it would play out something like this, wouldn't you?
Yeah, pretty close. And who's to say, too? With what's going on with Florida, Texas, Arizona, and everything else, you could also make the argument if you're Rob Manfred in the owners to the arbitrator, like this is, how much sooner could we have gotten going with what's going on with COVID? Like,
That'll be their argument. We couldn't have started sooner with COVID sweeping the nation. Even so, we had to shut down all our spring facilities, every single one of them, to wipe them clean.
So I just don't know. If you're Tony Clark and you don't win this grievance, I don't know how you continue as the head of the union with how this played out.
If they would have executed the win and wear campaign about a month earlier than they did, then they had a chance to put pressure on the owners because you still have a number of days in the calendar, and it wouldn't allow them to just stick to that 60-game schedule that they really wanted to implement in the first place. Like, because you would have had so much time, if the players were saying we are ready and willing to go back to work, even if we can't come to a new agreement, then that would have put a lot more pressure on the owners. But that's not what Tony Clark did. He played right into the owners' hands by allowing this to go on as long as it did. And now you've just run out of days on the calendar. So, yeah, you would be justified if you're a Major League Baseball owner in saying that we played the longest possible season based on what we finally came to the conclusion that we couldn't come to a new agreement from the one that we had in late March.
Yeah, I mean, we could sit here going back and forth and be mad, but this feels like ultimately the outcome that each side wanted, unless the players and Tony Clark got exactly what they were asking for.
Which wasn't like they were ever going to get.
Which they weren't going to get. And I agree with Chris. Had it been when and where a month ago, you know, maybe this thing swings in favor of the players a little bit, and the owners have to take a real hard look at coming to a deal. But I don't see how – I don't think the players won. The fans definitely didn't win.
Of course not.
And I just don't know. I mean, when baseball is going to start, it's still going to be baseball outside the universal DH. You'll have, what, a week before the NBA and NHL start up?
If it starts the 24th, right around there, yeah, NBA is supposed to start on the 30th. So
yeah, and the NHL on the 30th too.
Right.
So now you're going into the back end of seasons where you're playing playoffs. Would you rather watch a regular season baseball game, or are you going to watch NBA and NHL playoffs?
Yeah, and you could have probably started at least 2 weeks earlier and owned sports for weeks.
Yeah, but you didn't want to play more games for less than your fully prorated salaries. And the owners weren't going to agree to that. And now you gave up loan forgiveness. You gave, postseason pool. I mean, I don't know how they won. And they're still being asked to take on 100% of the risk.
Right.
Health-wise.
And they got to sign off on that today.
The only way you win is if you win in a grievance, and that's going to be a year from now. So, I don't think there's a win here for the players. I think it's a win for the owners in terms of being able to lock in the player costs. But you've done damage to your sport. Now, whether or not it's irreparable remains to be seen. But people are not going to forget how this went on back and forth over the course of 2 months, millionaires arguing with billionaires, not about the conditions that guys would return to work in the midst of a pandemic.
Which would have been understandable.
They were arguing about money. And that's the part that I think it's going to be real tough for fans to digest that and move past that.
Yeah, but I think you would have been, and again, I agree with you, but I would have liked your chances a whole hell of a lot more if they had come to an agreement and had, players mic'd up. If they had the opportunity to have 16 teams in the postseason. Like, I think that would have been, it would have made it a little bit more exciting. You would have forgot about it.
Well, you know what happened is every team would have been involved. Every single team would have been fighting for a playoff spot up until probably the last 2 weeks of the season.
Yeah, but now, you're going to have fan bases that just totally disengage if their team gets off to a slow start.
Is. You know, the Orioles will start out 1-12 and then they're done.
Yeah, and on top of it too, could you imagine if your team, you have your best starting pitcher get COVID?
No.
Because you're talking, days equal games. So you're missing, 10 to 14 days?
14.
10 to 14 games.
Yeah.
And if you're a pitcher and all of a sudden try to get yourself back, you end up missing half the season.
Yeah, but if you start out 3-15 and you get COVID then, are you even going to try to get back?
No.
Or you just say, I'm done.
No, you probably say you're done, but I'm just saying for one of these teams, one of the competitive teams that you think could win a championship. You're losing a guy for the amount of days is the amount of games.
Yeah.
With how baseball's been worked.
Look around all these other sports. You have star players that are now contracting COVID. You don't think it's going to happen in baseball too?
You know what the scariest thing too is? Did you listen to, and I'm sure we'll talk about it, did you listen to Fauci? Of course you did. You listen to Fauci on K yesterday?
Yeah.
Yes.
So I had texted, like I told you guys yesterday, I wanted to know, from the time you were exposed to COVID-19, how long it would take for you to pop positive on a test. And he said like 2 to 3 days.
Yeah, he said 2 days, yeah.
So you could be, so what does that mean? You could be what? I could be negative on a Monday, negative on a Tuesday, but be carrying it for those 2 days?
Correct.
Yes.
How does that not spread around a locker room?
Well, because you don't even know that the players have it.
Well, that's what I mean.
Yeah, of course.
I'm negative. No big deal, I'm negative. And then Tuesday, I'm negative. Even if you're testing every day.
But that, but you still but to me, the fact that it does pop up on a test after 2 days is why you have to test every single day.
Every day.
It's why you have to test every single day, because guys could be asymptomatic for as long as 5 days. So, I mean, it's one of those things where if you test every single day, you have a better chance of being able to catch the player and isolate the player so he's not transmitting the virus to the rest of the team.
Okay. He can have all this travel, too.
Let's just talk about worst case scenario for a quick second. Because I agree with you, and we've said this the entire time. It's got to be testing every day. Just like what the NHL is going to do night before, you test, you get your results, and then you show up.
Yep.
Major League Baseball, no bubble. NFL, no bubble. So say even in the NFL, you're testing every single day. Monday negative, Tuesday negative, Wednesday negative. Thursday, you know, I'm going to go to dinner. Goes to dinner. Friday negative, Saturday negative. You play the game on Sunday. You've had it since the day you went out, you had it. And now you played a game on a Sunday.
Right.
You pop positive on a Monday. What happens to, I mean, now you're talking about both of those teams.
Right.
With a guy running around
that's exposed. Every single player on both of those teams have been exposed.
How does that work?
I don't know.
If this thing can hang out for a couple days in your system without testing positive, I don't know how you combat it.
I don't think you can, Rick.
Because in a non-bubble situation, you're gonna put yourself at risk. Like, guys aren't just gonna go from the facility right to their houses and not go anywhere.
That's the point. Like, I think trying to completely eliminate the risk is not realistic. You're gonna have some risk. You're gonna have guys that get infected with COVID-19. It's just a matter of trying to isolate those players as quickly as you can, as to not let it run through the rest of the team. But there are going to be a lot of players, a lot of professional athletes that get coronavirus. But that's what you have to understand going in. When you start talking about a return to play, you have to be willing to accept the fact that you are going to have a number of players that get it. It's just about having a plan on how you're going to deal with that once you get to that point. That's it.
Yeah, I just don't even know. I mean, you can have all the protocols and everything else. I don't know how you would deal. I mean, look what's happening with women's soccer. You have to have a team pull out.
Right.
Orlando pulled out because they had 6 of their players and 4 of their staff test positive.
Well, what happens if a player gets it? Like you said, like, run through the scenario. Player gets it, even if he tests positive right away. Like, if he's been around the team the day before, test positive the next day, what do you now do? Do you now quarantine all the players on the team? You can't do that for 2 weeks.
Do you have to reschedule the game? Like, all of those things become questions that have to be answered.
But how can you reschedule the games, right? I mean, they're already packed into 66 days with 60 games. I don't know what the answer.
You can't.
Feel like there's
you're
so
gonna
many
get
questions.
Because you're gonna get a situation like you had with what we talked about yesterday in observations with the Russian soccer, where you're gonna have, you know, extended rosters, so you'll replace whoever ends up popping positive. And then continue testing it. If someone tests positive, then that person needs to be taken out. I mean, there's no perfect solution to this.
I guess my question is, what number of players have to be infected on a given team before you have to even consider, you know, not playing again?
Right. I don't know. And are the Dodgers not going to play? Are the Yankees not going to play? I mean, they're supposed to win the World Series this year. Are these elite teams going to say, well, 6 guys have tested positive, now we're going to not play for 2 weeks?
But what if it's not 6 guys? What if it's 10 guys? What if it's 15 guys?
Chris, I mean, I don't know. We're just spitballing here. I have no idea.
But I don't either. But I find it hard to believe that you would be able to play a game if you have that number, that many players that have been infected with the virus and that are currently, you know, in a position to be able to transmit that virus to other players on opposing teams.
Right. And what happens if you're on a plane? What happens if you travel from city to city?
Well, you're
going to
be
on a plane.
What do you mean, what if? You're going to be. I mean, just saw it happen in golf. Nick Watney shows up on a Tuesday, tests negative, and then all of a sudden on Friday, he tests positive. And the people that they tested that he played with were negative, obviously, because Fauci just told you it takes two to three days to pop positive.
So now you got to wait 2 or 3 days.
Maybe, well, it's just eyewash.
2 or 3 days.
But it's just eyewash. You're just pretending to care at that point. Because as soon as those guys tested negative, they got to play again. When in actuality, you probably should have shut them down because it's going to take at least 2 days to find out
probably
if they're positive or not.
Probably so.
And then, I mean, the Orlando Pride, they went to a bar.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know what to say. You see,
but that's what's going
to
happen.
Comes down with it. Did you see the video? And he's out partying.
Yeah, because you're trusting people. If you're not in a bubble situation, you're trusting guys and gals
to
do the right
thing.
But you
don't trust them. Do you trust these people?
No.
Do you trust anybody? No.
No, I don't. It's state to state. It's person to person. Depends on who you talk to. Their hope is all these leagues, and they won't say it, is that they're going to stick to the percentages. And if you're a healthy, young athlete, you'll get it, you'll get through it, and everything will be fine.
And if there's that one?
Well, that's what if there's that one, God forbid.
If there's that one that's really healthy and somehow, is the outlier, then what happens?
Oh, then you got to shut it down. Then you have to reassess. But I think that's a risk they're willing to take at this point.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, but I feel like just by sheer numbers, that's inevitable that you will have that one athlete. When you're talking about college football, you're talking about the NBA, you're talking about baseball, you're talking about the NFL.
We're talking about thousands of players. Bad scenario.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
And it feels like football. To be honest, it feels like football.
And that's what I thought was interesting about what Dr. Fauci had to say on the K show yesterday, and I didn't realize this, but he said your level of exposure can impact the intensity that the virus attacks your body. I mean, if you're playing a game like football, which is a collision sport, and somebody has it, you're going to be exposed to a lot of the virus. Like, that would be scary to think that these big athletes, some of these guys that are obese, some of these guys have high blood pressure, you would wonder how they would deal with being infected with COVID-19 and whether or not they'd be able to survive it. Like, that's a legitimate concern.
Hey, you're talking 30 minutes. I mean, he said, not just, I mean, the intensity of the exposure, like if it's spit in your eye or something like that.
But the duration as well.
Exactly. Right. You're talking about 30 minutes. I mean, if you're an offensive and defensive lineman, I mean, you're talking about 30 minutes. I mean, if you're a center and the nose tackle on the other team has it, you're going up against that nose tackle for 30 minutes in a game of him sweating and spitting all over you.
Yeah, and they said the eyes are also very, very big concern here.
Buy some stock in sports goggles.
I don't know, just kind of feels daunting.
Horace Grant style.
Not the Eric Dickerson rec specs.
It is daunting, Dave. I mean, it is daunting. But again, that's why, back to the initial conversation about Major League Baseball, why the message coming from Major League Baseball players should have been the entire time was
health.
The health risk.
I could not agree more. Very relaxing, very soothing. VCR with you, 98.7. Right? I mean, this is very soft, very melodic.
You are a sick puppy.
With Dave Rothenberg.
Light style.
Voice dropped an octave and everything.
I mean, this is very relaxing.
I didn't realize you had this kind of bass in your voice.
How am I a savage? What did I do?
No, I mean, just by nature. I mean, by definition, Dave Rothenberg is a savage.
I think that's fair.
Yeah, it goes without saying. By the way, quick show round of applause. Well represented on the K show yesterday.
Yes. Oh, thank you.
It was DTR. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. It was funny because I'll be honest with you. I having some issues with my DirecTV, and I had called them, and the number that called moments later I thought was DirecTV, so I answered it. I was like, "Hello," and it's like, "It's RJ." I was like, "Oh," I was like, "Hi, RJ." He's like, "Don wants you for was it Last One Standing?" And I looked at the clock, and it was like, I think it was after 5 o'clock. And I was like, but when is this for? This can't be today's show. I was like, they're in like extra time now. They've pushed it back into the 5 o'clock hour. It's still going on. So I got the highest Mets average, of John Olerud, and I was done with that. Moments later, the phone rings again, and Michael needed my help.
Yeah, but the Olerud was impressive.
Very impressive.
Well, that's my team.
Yeah, but the second the question came out of Don's mouth, it was boom, Olerud and they didn't even ask you the year. It was Olerud and the year.
Yeah. Well, I had it. I had it ready to go.
Well, so, you've proven, Dave, that you are the go-to person for trivia on the New York sports radio airwaves.
I feel good about that. Yes. I feel confident about that. Yes. And I thought I represented our show very, very well yesterday.
Yeah. No, I mean, there was nothing else you could have done in that situation to make us more proud.
Yes. I could have been like the guy on Millionaire. Remember when he won and he called his dad? For the phone a friend?
Yeah, but and you, it, I mean, but
and
again,
the dad answered, and he's like, you know, what kind of help do you need? He's like, nothing. I just want to tell you, I'm about to win $1 million.
Yeah, that's ultimate confidence.
I could have styled it a little bit.
Yeah, that's ultimate confidence.
But I knew the old route.
My dad wouldn't even be on my list of people to call.
Now, did I hear this correct? Don did not know. Who I honestly don't even know who won yesterday, Kay or Don?
Kay
won.
I think Kay actually stole a Don question. Don didn't get it right. Kay was given the opportunity to steal, stole it, just to add insult to injury. Yeah, Kay's been on a heater.
Nice.
He's been doing good.
He's like you. If he doesn't do well, he hates the segment. And when he does well, he falls in love with the segment.
Yeah, naturally.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, why would you do a segment
to you?
But why would you do a segment that draws attention to you being bad at something?
But it's not about that. I mean, most people don't know everything.
Yeah, I'm not. Listen, I don't need to know everything, but I would like a vast majority of the things I'm asked to actually have the right answer.
But I think the majority of the questions that are thrown your way, you have the answer for.
Which is great until all of a sudden, you know, Andy from Merrick decides he wants to prove a point.
Yes.
And he starts throwing screwballs and everything else and embarrasses us.
And I got that sneaky feeling that today would be that day that Andy tries to pull that stunt.
You think?
Yeah, I think it's today.
Well, we'll work together as a collective unit and hopefully we'll get all three questions right and we'll, like we did yesterday.
I hope so.
That's all we can do. That's all we can do.
I hope so.
That's all we can do.
Put our heads together, try to get the right answers and move on.
That's right. But it took a long time for the K-Show to call. I've been waiting for that call.
Yeah, they've had this thing with Han and Carlin, and they kind of just completely push it to this. I think they're intimidated by your knowledge, to be honest.
Yeah, maybe. But I think you'd want that on your show, right?
Well, listen,
if I was not on your show and you were in the same situation, who would your first call be?
Dave Rothenberg.
Exactly.
Well, it would be you, unless it was a question, unless it was a... I mean,
be careful.
No, but unless it was a sport that I didn't, you know,
sure,
if it was
NASCAR, right. I agree.
Yeah. Or if it was like an intense hockey question that didn't have to do with the Rangers and I had, you know, picked up my phone and I actually had someone that was, you know,
sure,
involved
like
in the NHL.
Could call Don Cherry or someone, yes.
Yeah. Probably not Don Cherry, but you know what, yeah.
You know what I'm saying.
Yeah. Like if it was a goalie question,
could you call
I
Steve
would probably
Alicat?
Say,
right.
Exactly right.
Yes.
One of these guys are jerks or something?
Yeah,
I would agree.
Stay
all right, let's get
Don Cherry sound.
Thank you for the love. It was fun to help those guys out yesterday. All right, let's go to Jeff in Manhattan. Jeff, you're first up on a Tuesday on 98.7 ESPN.
Thank you, Dave. I'm honored to be first, and I want to thank you guys. You're the best listener in sports radio, whether it's the sports issues of the day or the social issues of the day. Incredibly insightful and thought-provoking.
Oh, very kind. We appreciate it, Jeff.
Let me weigh in, please, if I may, on the COVID issue and the restarting of the leagues. You know, I've been a sports fan my whole life. I'm 60 years old. I can't get enough of it like you guys, whatever the sport is. And I'm as anxious as anybody to see sports come back. But I must tell you, in seeing just a little bit of the reopening that we've seen, it's eminently clear that we just cannot trust the players, the leagues, and the commissioners. Let me give you a couple of examples. Over the weekend, we've all gotten a very strict education on the protocols for COVID. We probably never heard of COVID before this year. I certainly never did. And we all learned, once somebody is positive, the protocol is, the CDC and every other safety protocol measure tells you that person who tests positive has to quarantine. And anybody that person has been around, through contact tracing, you find these people, they have to quarantine. Now, it couldn't be simpler as to what the rules are to protect everybody else. And we've all seen what happens when those protocols aren't followed with the incredible contagion of this disease. So we have the PGA Tour that restarts, and they have months to think about what they're going to do. I think they wrote a manual. I think all the leagues are writing manuals, telling everybody what has to be done. And what happens? Nick Watney tests positive. Okay, so Nick Watney has to withdraw. Well, that's the easy part. Now, what about the contact tracing? Okay, He flew down to the tournament in a private jet with Sergio Garcia and whoever else was on that jet. He played the round where, after which he tested positive with two other players. I think it was Taylor and List, and his caddy and those players' caddies. He was on the range with, I think, Koepka, or in the parking lot with Koepka. He was around McIlroy. Who knows who else he was around? So what does the PGA Tour do? Do they tell all these people through contact tracing, look, we're sorry about this, but you need to quarantine because you were around somebody who tested positive. It's as simple as that. And you have to stay away from other people. So in case you're positive, other people will be saved from being positive. And the answer that, okay, well, you know what? If you're around Watney, even if you're not, we're going to test you every day. But we all know it's a basic fact that's been ingrained in our head for months now. You could test negative today after being around Watney mm-hmm. or anybody else that's positive. You could test negative tomorrow.
Right, and then two or three days down the road, Jeff, you can test positive from the contact that you had with him. You're right. I mean, Jeff, look, I'm not going to lie. Guys, it's scary. The whole thing is scary. And could you convince me that sports coming back right now, Rick, is not the right thing to do? You probably could.
Yeah, you probably could. And again, I wouldn't disagree with you, but I think because of the financial ramifications,
exactly.
Because I mean, they're relying on the percentages that, you know, it's what, 1% or 99% of the people of, you know, a certain age that are in great shape don't have life threatening symptoms
mm-hmm.
and come out of it on the other side. They're relying on that. I mean, to his point, and that's what would scare the hell out of me if I was Major League Baseball or the NFL, is even if you're testing regularly, if this thing can just, I can be asymptomatic, test negative, and have it the entire time, and then, you know, 3 days later, test positive, how are you going to, how are you tracing my contact?
Right. And how do you know when you contracted it?
I have no idea. The only reason Nick Watney knew he had it was because he didn't like what his heart rate looked like on his watch, and went and got himself tested.
Because
mm-hmm. otherwise, I mean, let's be honest too. I mean, otherwise, if he's in, I mean, good on him doing the right thing, and he was probably scared that, you know, he possibly had it. But I mean, what if this is the final round? You have a 3-stroke lead.
He probably is like, you know what? I'll deal with it tomorrow.
You're not going to self-report your symptoms.
I'll deal with it tomorrow.
I don't know, man. There's a lot of different things. There are a lot of different obstacles, but I mean, the reality is guys are going to get it, and you're just going to have to keep your fingers crossed that no one passes away. Guys get through it and they're fine on the other side.
I mean, it's what you said, Rick. There's going to be an assumed risk that comes along with restarting these sports, and everybody recognizes the financial motivation is really what's pushing everything forward in the sports realm. And because the players are the actual product, I mean, you have to understand that if you're going to restart the sport, you're going to have to put guys in harm's way in terms of being able to get the coronavirus. That's just what it is. That's unavoidable to me. Like, I don't know how you can eliminate that out of the equation. So you just have to accept that, and you look at the statistics, the probability of it, of guys being able to get the coronavirus and then get on the other side of it and be healthy. You just have to bet on that. And I think that's what football is doing. That's what baseball is planning on doing. That's what hockey's going to do. That's what the NBA is going to do.
But I like the chances of the NBA and the NHL because they're in a bubble.
I like that, too. That's what
and here's the other thing, though, too. Can I ask this could be a stupid question.
We like stupid questions.
Okay, so, I mean, going to the NBA bubble down in Orlando, and I understand, you know, Florida right now is a hot spot for COVID-19. You mean to tell me with the amount of unemployment and everything else, you can't at Disney find people to work that are willing to actually stay inside the bubble for the entire time or for a certain amount of time leave and then bring new people in?
Yeah, kind of rotate. Staff,
yeah, and make sure they're clean when they come back in or they come in for the first time.
Yeah, you come in and maybe it's 2 week shifts. You test negative, you're in for 2 weeks, you can't leave, and then you're out. More people come in for 2 weeks. It makes no sense to have people going back and forth every day.
No, because now you're potentially bringing it in.
But you have the same issue in terms of that person not having COVID-19, but not having it at a level in their system where they test positive for it. The only way you would do that is if you test them, quarantine them for a few days, and test them again. That would be the only way that you would know to make sure that they're completely safe to bring them into the bubble.
Then right? You have to do that. Yeah, that would, I mean, yeah. That would be protocol.
Yeah.
Is that we bring you in, test you for, you know, 2 or 3 days. You give me, you know, whatever it is, 2 consecutive negative tests, 3 consecutive right. negative tests.
You lock away for those 2-3 days.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They have a certain place in the facility, but I'm sure they could find people. Could you imagine that, though? You give them that opportunity, like you're, you know, you're a young single person, and they're like, hey, you want to be around NBA players for 2 straight
right.
weeks?
Right. Yes. I'm sure you get paid decently. And you look at the unemployment in this country right now. You don't think they could find however many people they needed to do this? You'd have a line around the corner for it.
Yeah, and they would just do what we do. I mean, it's just everyday life. Like the food comes in, you go. I mean, the boxes come in, you wipe everything down, you bring it in. No new people in. It's the only way. I mean, that's the only way to have a bubble. It's not a bubble of people coming in and out of it.
No.
There's no perfect solution, though. Even Dr. Fauci. I mean, he doesn't have all the answers. Like
nobody
as far
has
as.
The answers.
Nobody long-term ramifications,
the
all the different stuff. What happens to kids? Kawasaki? I mean,
the only way to eliminate the risk is not to play, and correct. That's not an option. So that's where we're at.
Might be in baseball.
No, baseball is going to
play. They're going to play baseball.
I think they'll pass it as well.
Yeah, they're going to play.
Let's bring them in, our trivia wizard, Andy from Merrick. Good morning, Andy.
Good morning, DCR. Despite some discord in MLB, I have a three-pack of baseball questions and a bonus as well.
Oh, all right.
Nice.
All right, starting with Christopher Lee Canty, a man with a huge strike zone. Among active teams, your New York Yankees have made 55 postseasons. Can you tell me which franchise is number 2 with 33 postseason appearances?
Ooh.
This is a good one. I really don't have any idea, so I'm going to lean on our trivia expert, Dave Rothenberg, to kind of clue me in the right direction.
Well, I'd have to think Dodgers or Giants would be my
yes.
first thought. They've been around forever. So that would be my thought. Rick, do you have any?
Take your time.
Any
Take
idea?
Your time. Take your time. Do I have any idea?
I would guess it's the Dodgers or the Cardinals.
No, God, Dave, don't start.
Yeah, right.
I would go with the Dodgers, Chris, with the Cardinals, Giants as second and third. But I feel somewhat confident that the Dodgers would be the answer.
And you would be correct. 33.
My man,
I got you, Chris.
My All right,
man Rothenberg.
Rick, among
yes,
active MLB franchises, those same New York Yankees hold the record for most home runs with over 16,000. Can
oh
you tell
God.
Me which franchise is number 2 with 14,682 career home runs? Use Dave's logic that he was just speaking about teams that have been around for a while.
Been around for a long time.
Been around for a long time. It's not going to be the same. Dave, what are you thinking?
One of those three, I would think.
Let's go through this.
I can't imagine him going Dodgers again.
No, that's what I mean.
Maybe the Giants. I mean, the Giants have been around forever.
Giants forever.
I mean, since well back into the 1800s.
Giants were established in 1883.
Right, and then let's think of it. You probably can't say the specific hitters, but they've had huge home run hitters, right? I mean, McCovey,
yeah.
They've had Bonds.
Do we just go with that one?
I don't know.
I don't know either, but we just go with it. I mean, I like
Giants.
The rationale. All right, we're going with the Giants, Andy.
Rick, you are correct.
Yes. All right.
Hey, there you go, Ricky.
And today happens to be the anniversary of Barry Bonds becoming the first 500-500 guy, home runs and stolen bases.
Wow.
Dave, those...
I'm not going to know it. I know I'm not going to know it. I help these guys out. I lead them to promise, to success, and now it's to me, and I won't know it. Go ahead.
Those aforementioned San Francisco Giants have the most career wins as a franchise with over 11,000. Which franchise is number two with 10,982 wins?
So the Giants have how many?
Giants has 11,165, which is approximately 170 more than team number two.
All right, so it could be the Cubs, but the Cubs have been so bad for so long. Could be the Cardinals. And I don't think it's the Yankees just because they came into the league after those other teams.
So far, your logic is correct.
Braves have been around a long time, too. Rick, you have any idea?
No, not really.
I feel like this is the Cardinals.
But the Cubs have been around longer than the Cardinals.
What are we focused on again? Andy, repeat the question. I'm kind of dumb.
Second most wins in the history of baseball. What team?
Second most wins in the history of baseball.
Yep.
Well, the Giants have been around the longest.
All wins?
They have the most.
Maybe it's the Cubs.
All wins?
Could be the Pirates.
Or regular season wins.
I mean, these are the teams it has to be. It's one of those. We have named the team.
No, I think you're right, Dave. It's probably the Cubs.
You think it's the Cubs?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Final answer?
No, I don't know. Hang on a second.
The Giants are one.
The Giants are one, followed by this team, which I know is not the Yankees because they came around so much later. So it could be the Dodgers. Could
Canty,
be the Cubs.
How good? Canty, percentage. How do you feel about the guy? Give me a percentage, Cubs. How do you feel about it? You love it?
Hello?
Canty, yes, you love the Chris. Cubs or no?
Yo.
I don't know if we have Chris. All right.
I don't know if we have Chris.
I'm gonna go with the Cubs. Final answer, Andy, Cubs.
And of course, you got it right. 3 for 3.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, baby.
All right. Now Rick's in a good mood. Do we really want to press it and go for four? Or do we want to stop
the bonus three? Questions got some cheddar on it. So,
ooh, right. Cheddar.
Which organization has the most losses as a franchise with exactly 11,000?
Exactly 11,000.
Also established in the 1880s.
I love when you ask questions from the 1880s.
Now that could be the
Phillies. My favorite.
And I'll give you a little help here. This is the worst.
I think it's the Phillies.
Phillies.
Worst sports city in America.
He's going to say Phillies.
Philadelphia Phillies. Yeah.
Phillies.
Guys, fantastic as always. Stay healthy.
I mean, Rick, if you're in a bad mood and we don't do well, you have to be feeling very good about things at this very moment.
No, I'll take the rest of the week off.
I'm done. That was sensational. We just did beautifully.
It's teamwork makes the dream work, baby. As Milo says, teamwork makes the dream work.
And I like.
But this was that day that Andy was coming for our neck, though.
Yeah.
Yes.
This was.
I got to be honest. His questions are very good.
Very good questions.
Yeah. We
especially the way he ends it. He's become like the Dos Equis guy of trivia. Stay healthy, my friends.
And then we have Mr. Hydration, of course, at 12:30 today. Mike Tenenbaum. So.
Yeah. No observations today.
We're going to have to figure out a way. We have Jesse Rogers at 12. Maybe we do like a back end of the 12:20 quick observations or
what
after.
Are the chances? With what's going on in Major League Baseball, what are the chances, knowing the three of us, that we get through Jesse Rogers that quickly? 0%.
All right, then we should finish Tenenbaum by 44 and then at like 49 do observations for 5 minutes.
That's another 0%.
No, I will not go through a day and not have – I'm giving my weather, I'll tell you that. I'm going to find out what time you went to bed. I'm telling you that as well.
Let me ask you guys this question. Are you opposed to trying to piggyback observations on the back end of CMT?
We could. You know what we could do? We could do the 11:30 We could do 11:30 CMT and then 11:45 observations.
No, you know better than this.
Yes.
You know better than this.
I'm not going through the day without an observation. I'll tell you that right now.
Observations, yeah.
There are some positives that go along with being quarantined. There are some negatives. One of the negatives being that both the assistant program director and our program director listen to every single show. You know how they feel about back-to-back segments.
All right. Well, in the 12 o'clock hour, I'm hell or high water.
I'm not dealing with that phone call. I don't want a Zoom meeting today.
Well, Zoom it up. Private Zoom meeting at 104 because observations just happen at some point. 98
noon hour.
Yeah.
DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. Weekdays at 10 on 98.7 ESPN.
Geico knows there are many reasons why you ride. From the thrill of the revving engine and pure adrenaline of flying down the highway, to the confidence of knowing that Geico always has your back with 24/7 access to claims service. But Ari Snyder has one reason in particular.
I have extremely large upper arms. They won't even fit into most shirts. Thankfully, biking really embraces vest culture, so I feel accepted.
Geico Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.